Before we get into our what if we're wrong discussion, let me cover some stories that sit at the intersection of culture, sports accountability, and domestic policy. The Michigan sign-stealing lawsuit is significant because it comes from inside, a former coach alleging that the program's leadership covered up the sign-stealing scheme that predated Michigan's 2023 national championship. If the allegations hold up, it raises the uncomfortable question of whether the title was won under fraudulent conditions, which has implications for NCAA enforcement and for the program's legacy.
Sign-stealing itself has a complicated history in college football. It exists on a spectrum from legitimate defensive preparation to illegal electronic assistance. What allegedly happened at Michigan was on the electronic assistance end, which is what the NCAA prohibited. A lawsuit from a former coach carries more legal weight than an outside accusation because it implies someone with direct knowledge is willing to testify under penalty of perjury.
The Cyclospora outbreak is a public health story that deserves more attention than it's getting. More than 3,000 cases confirmed across Michigan and Ohio, with lettuce identified as the likely source. Cyclospora chitinensis is a parasitic protozoan. It causes cyclosporiasis, which produces watery diarrhea, fatigue, and nausea that can last weeks if untreated. The treatment is trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole, which is effective but requires diagnosis, and many cases go undiagnosed because the parasite isn't always included in standard stool screens. 3,000 confirmed cases means the actual number infected is likely several times higher.
The California grapevine recall from Costco is a slower-moving but potentially devastating agricultural story. The invasive pest in question, if it's the European grapevine moth or similar, can devastate vineyards. California's wine industry is a $45 billion sector. Going door-to-door to collect plants from Costco purchases is an extraordinary public health response. And it signals that Santa Clara County officials believe the contamination risk is serious enough to justify the expense and intrusiveness of that approach.
The heat dome affecting more than 100 million Americans is a critical infrastructure and public health story that tends to get underreported because heat deaths are diffuse. They don't happen in a single dramatic moment. Extreme heat kills more Americans annually than floods, hurricanes, and tornadoes combined. When a heat dome pushes east and covers population centers from the Midwest through the Mid-Atlantic, the mortality risk falls disproportionately on elderly people, outdoor workers, and low-income households without air conditioning.
Hunter Biden's claim that Laura Loomer's photo of his family in Cape Town led to the removal of his Secret Service detail. That's a story where the sequence of events matters. Biden says the detail was revoked after Loomer posted the image. The administration's position is presumably that the decision was based on security assessment. The political dimension is obvious, but the substantive question, whether former First Family members maintain security protection and under what conditions it can be withdrawn, is one that has implications beyond the Biden family specifically.
Mike Rowe's comments about America being untethered from work in the context of the Pentagon's skilled trades push is a cultural and economic conversation that cuts across party lines. The trades gap is real. The Associated Builders and Contractors estimates a shortage of roughly 500,000 construction workers this year alone, and similar gaps exist in electrical, plumbing, HVAC, and welding. Rowe has been making this argument for years, and the Pentagon's involvement signals recognition that the military's maintenance and construction needs are running into the same skilled labor shortage affecting the civilian economy.
Now, let's turn to our what if we're wrong conversation. Because today's episode has had a strong through line of confident claims about the Iran conflict. Specifically, the broadly shared assumption that Trump's strikes and rhetoric represent a coherent strategy of maximum pressure that will either force regime change or a favorable nuclear deal. The claim is essentially American military superiority combined with crippling pressure on Iran's leadership will produce a favorable outcome faster than a prolonged conventional conflict.
I want to stress test that claim seriously because I've been making versions of it throughout this episode. The strongest counterargument starts with the historical record of maximum pressure campaigns. The U.S. has applied maximum pressure to Iran since 1979. Sanctions, proxy conflicts, covert action, diplomatic isolation, and the Islamic Republic has demonstrated a survival instinct and institutional durability that consistently surprises analysts who predicted its collapse. The clerical regime survived the Iran-Iraq War, which killed hundreds of thousands. It survived the Green Revolution of 2009. It survived the assassination of Qasem Soleimani in 2020.
The assumption that might be wrong here is the nature of regime cohesion. Trump's claim that Khamenei is 90% gone, if taken at face value, suggests the leadership structure is fragmenting. But Iranian governance doesn't depend on a single leader the way some authoritarian systems do. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Guardian Council, the Assembly of Experts, these are institutions with their own interests and survival mechanisms. Removing Khamenei, even if true, doesn't mean the system collapses. It may simply mean a different faction of the clerical establishment takes control, possibly a more hardline one.
Here's another assumption worth questioning: that striking Pickaxe Mountain would actually set back Iran's nuclear program meaningfully. The IAEA's last comprehensive assessment before the conflict escalated suggested Iran had achieved sufficient uranium enrichment knowledge that the physical destruction of facilities would delay rather than eliminate the program. The knowledge and the human capital exist. Dispersed enrichment activity could resume within years, possibly faster, if the international inspection regime collapses entirely under the pressure of conflict.
And the Cuba drone angle raises a question about blowback that maximum pressure advocates tend to underweight. If Iran succeeds in establishing any kind of operational presence in the Western Hemisphere, even a minimal one, it fundamentally changes the domestic American political calculus. The 79% of Americans who expect a prolonged conflict are not 79% demanding escalation. Many of them may conclude that a war that brings Iranian assets to Cuba isn't serving American interests. What's the indicator to watch? If domestic polling on the conflict shifts, specifically if support for continued strikes drops below 50% among Republicans, that's the signal that the political foundation for the current strategy is eroding faster than anticipated.
To be clear, neither of us is arguing that the Iranian government's behavior has been acceptable or that its nuclear program doesn't pose real risks. The point is that confidence in any particular strategy's outcome should be calibrated to the historical record of similar strategies, and that record is mixed at best.